Okay, so I debated a lot about how to do the lecture piece. And ultimately decided on stories more than the timeline. So I gave you a lot of the timeline. I gave you the whole timeline, and I'm going to hit a few highlights of it, but mostly for our class four sources, Protestant Christianity, Are We Christian? I'm going to speak more personally. So here we go. It's kind of a mini sermon, in fact. But someday, maybe after I try it out with you, you can tell me how it goes, give me feedback, and then I'll do it. It's scary, honestly, to talk about Christianity and the relationship to Christianity, because I think everybody has very charged feelings about it. And so, but I want to speak really authentically about where I am on this, and it's evolving. It's always evolving. So, and we all are in different places about it. So I offer you that in the midst of ongoing self-culture. In my early days in Unitarian Universalism, I appreciated the lack of Jesus. I appreciated that his name was rarely, if ever, used. I was less worried about God, though I was fine either way on that front. It was Jesus I had a problem with. Jesus was the stand-in name for the ways religion had betrayed me, for its hypocrisy, for its condescension, superficiality, and pain. Instead of Jesus, we had the seven principles. In all of their plain, humanist, and liberal arts education language. I knew we Unitarian Universalists had come out of Christianity, but like my own coming out journey, I felt no need for us to go back in. It was the late 90s, and my practicing Catholic parents had not taken that coming out of mine all that well. The Catholic Church was at, I wanted to say the height, but really just an ongoing anti-gay rhetoric, which was especially painful given that the real sexual predators they should have been addressing were their own priests. Evangelicals were still explicit in their focus on the family gay conversion efforts. They still do it. They're just less overt about it. And my own liberal arts education had left me all too clear on the ways that the Christian church had been, as Marlon said, a force of violence, corruption, and oppression all around the world for millennia. Jesus, as a sign and symbol, represented to me the forces working against equality, against justice, against kindness, and against love. I'm guessing that this story resonates with a few of you. Many of us who come to Unitarian Universalism from other traditions, and that's most of us, carry some Jesus baggage. If those traditions weren't Christian traditions, the ways that we have been treated by Christians have left us skeptical about anything Jesus related. In the 8 years between my discovery of Unitarian Universalism and then when I started seminary, I softened a little in my Jesus allergy. And I'd attended a few UU classes at my congregation. I'd read a few John Buren's books. He's the one that does The Chosen Faith and those sort of intro books. As well as I was very dedicated in my reading of the monthly UU World. So I did start to realize how Unitarianism and Universalism were not totally other than Christianity. And along the way, my relationship with my parents healed, and they came to accept me. And interestingly, there was a parallel in the ways that my relationship with Jesus and Christianity also became less charged. I started to differentiate between the way that Christianity was being practiced and the message of Jesus, and remembered the sorts of things, as you all said, that he said, that Jesus actually said and did, things totally opposite from so much of what has become known as Christianity. As I softened, I also started to see others in my UU congregation who were not softening more clearly, who were so reactionary and sometimes cruel. And I started to wonder how we could say that we were so welcoming to all and didn't have a creed if we were often so negative about Christianity and so demeaning towards those who found their sense of ultimate truth in the ways and stories of Jesus. Still, it wasn't until I went to seminary that I fully engaged the question of the relationship between Unitarian Universalism and Christianity, that question that I pose quite simply, are we Christian? It happened on multiple fronts as I grew in my personal spiritual path, as well as my growing understanding of Unitarian Universalism as a faith tradition. On the personal front, I count four. There's probably a million of them, but four really critical things that happened that changed me forever, and I believe made me a better Unitarian Universalist and person. First, I set a clear intention going in that I wanted to try to understand what was a majority Christian population of pastors to be there. I was learning with Methodists and Presbyterians, Lutherans, United Church of Christ, all there, UUs, and then a few Jews and Muslims and pagans. We were the minority. And yet all the folks that were there that would come to ILF, ILF is known as a social justice organization. It's a very liberal institution. And so all of these were anti-oppression, anti-racism, multiculturalism oriented, all incredibly smart, thoughtful people, people who had clearly come to different feelings about this idea of Jesus and Christianity than I had. And I wanted to know why. Sincerely, why? What did Jesus mean to them? What did God mean to them? And what did Christianity mean to them? Why were they willing to dedicate their whole lives to their understanding and their practice? This open orientation was, to be honest, terrifying. I mean, would I find out that they weren't actually the friends that they were professing to be, not the allies they said they were? Was I not actually meant to be among them? What I found out talking and listening to their stories was actually quite the opposite. I found more doubts, questions, and complexity than I could have ever imagined. A creed, it turns out, does not mean uniformity, even amongst the clergy. And Unitarian Universalists do not have the corner on doubt. Through these conversations, my Christian colleagues became less other to me, and I think I did to them as well. Second, on the personal front, some of you have heard this story, but it's so important. In March of my first year, my son Joseph came to us unexpectedly over spring break, which means I left my second quarter of seminary with one child and came back a week later with two, with no plan, no money, no child care, no stuff for this brand new baby. It was about a week into the new quarter, maybe two, when my New Testament professor asked me to stay after class for a moment. I was worried she was going to tell me that the baby couldn't come to class anymore, which was like my backup plan until I could find up something more permanent. Instead, she asked me something minor about one of the questions I had asked or something. And meanwhile, the rest of the students piled out, and then it was just us. She helped me kind of collect my numerous things that I had with me. And then we walked out together to the foyer where all of the students from the class were gathered around and yelled out, "Surprise!" They'd thrown me a baby shower. All of them had gotten us gifts in these cards with notes of love and care for our family, our queer family. So not even our closest friends had done that for us, not even our church, our UU church. These Christians thought to do it, and they did it so generously. They truly showered, and they wore a baby shower, showered us with stuff that we desperately needed. I cried, and I told them, "This is very tricky of you. You're making me like Christians again." They were. So the third thing that happened that many of you have heard me talk about, I'm not going to tell you the whole story, I actually put it in when you're taking it home, the last page of that packet, was when I worked at the Denver Women's Prison and the experience there of coming to be more open to their what they talked about as their faith in Jesus. And finally, the fourth thing that happened was I got a fellowship through the Lilly Endowment, which was for young potential pastors for local Christian congregations. I don't know how they snuck me in the group. I was never anything other than I am, but what it did was put me in a cohort with these amazing young pastors-to-be from diverse Christian backgrounds, Pentecostals, Lutherans, disciples, all of them. But all of them, again, liberal, social justice-oriented, feminist, queer. So they were doing so many cool things about as they imagined the future of the church and its role in bringing about beloved community. So over 2 years, I was in this learning cohort with this group, and I was so inspired by them, and also, again, fully embraced. Unitarian Universalist, one of them in the first gathering said, "So are you one of those Christian UUs?" I was like, "Not really." And he was just the whole time just completely embraced. And what I realized is that what we were up to in our congregations was really not so different than what they were up to, and that it was weird and inefficient to think of ourselves as something other. We would be so much more effective if we work together, understanding the ways that we are all part of the same project. Now, all of these things, these personal things, conspired to make me believe that indeed we were, or at least we could be, potentially overlapping with this category called Christian. Okay, so all of these things were happening personally, and then also I was growing in my understanding of Unitarian Universalism. I was wrestling with the ways that as a faith movement, in any of our three incarnations, Unitarianism, Universalism, or Unitarian Universalism, how over the centuries we have been marginalized. We have been told we weren't welcome in the Christian church, right? Through our orthodoxy, our lack of agreeing with particular beliefs. But then in turn, the ways that we have marginalized ourselves. It's interesting, I started to realize there was an interesting parallel of how many of our personal stories, my story, how many of others' stories have played out at our institutional level. That is, as we have been pushed away, then we in turn have pushed back after being injured. So that even if we were welcome and included now, if we really were potential partners in the same venture, we wouldn't be able to accept that welcome. So I was thinking about this question, how much have we been marginalized? How much do we self-marginalize? But through all of that, I started to realize how profoundly Christian, not Christian-ish, but we have been for the large majority of our history, the first 400 years, if you trace us back to the Reformation, which you could go back further than that, but really we are primarily centered in the radical Reformation. There was no denying that we were born of Protestant Christianity, and so we could constructively engage that history, or we could continue to react and push against it. It just seemed to me, I sort of feel like, no, creativity, constructivism was a lot more life-giving than pushing against. Okay, so now all I have in my notes here is a point to the timeline. So let's look at the timeline for just a second so you can kind of go with me on the some of these critical points of our relationship with Christianity. So it's like the second page after the outline. So but way back in early Christianity, there were kind of three heresies that you can trace to Unitarianism and Universalism. One is traced back to Origen in 185, where he said he affirmed universal salvation. Then in around 270 or so, Arius became known as Arianism. His way of thinking was that Jesus was an enlightened prophet and soul, but not the exclusive Son of God. And finally, in about the 4th century, Pelagius, he denied the concept of original sin and affirmed free will. Now, all three of these are critical enemies of what became Orthodox Christianity, as solidified in Nicaea in 325, but things kept popping up. They would squash them back down, but the truth is that although that was a way of consolidating power, consolidating a sense of identity, people still thought many different things. So we can say that everything was settled at Nicaea, but in 325. But the reality is, like, lots of different things continued to happen. So over the course of between about 325 all the way to 1500. The Christianity and the state that continue to grow in relationship with the rise of popes and the confluence of power and the empire. Now, along the way, a key development was in the late 14th century when the Bible was translated into English. This was so important because finally people could read it for themselves. This, you have to see this as the most fundamental of all influences that combined in shaping the Unitarian movement. Unitarianism and Universalism were both Bible-based religions because we said, what you're talking about is not in there. Trinity, not there. And the universal salvation is a little more complicated, but it too was a biblical argument. Okay, so in 1517, Martin Luther did his big 95 treatises where he was trying to get reform after this. He said, look, this whole thing has gotten off track from where we originally meant to be. And he tried to reform, but he didn't mean to start a whole new movement alas, it was too late. 1525, I point to this guy named Zwingli, which he gets no press, but really he was just as important around the time. It was in reaction to him that we get the Anabaptists and the Radical Reformation. They were largely persecuted. You cannot say that this was the birth of Unitarianism or Universalism, but they're the forerunners of congregational polity, which is the right for a congregation to organize and determine itself, basically, that it could be independent, that the gathered body could contain enough wisdom in and of itself. Okay, and then I'm just going to skip ahead all the way to the Radical Reformation moves to the United States. Because out of that Reformation, a bunch of folks were persecuted enough, right? They wanted to contain the Reformation. It got out of hand. And so they were persecuted enough, then 20,000 left for the United States seeking religious freedom. That became... It's okay. So that group of people formed congregations. As my one of my history professors said, they came seeking religious freedom for them. We have a myth that they were seeking religious freedom for everyone. They were not. They were seeking religious freedom for them. So they came and they established a new, they required for the good of the whole, the common good, that everybody pay taxes to support worship life. Churches. And that became what's known as the Standing Order. The Standing Order was in Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New Hampshire, I think. And those churches are the seeds of Unitarianism. Those established churches, those churches ended up breaking into liberal and conservative wings. One, the conservatives were Trinitarians and Calvinists. The liberals were Unitarians and really Pelagians. They believed in free will and the potential of goodness in humanity. That Unitarian strand is what I told you in the beginning, 1819 Unitarian Christianity with the formation of, with William Ellery Channing. Okay, so now you're wondering about Universalists. Universalists were not, they were against the Standing Order. They had a problem with it. And so they were outside of the Standing Order. They petitioned for the right to have their own churches. I think they won, John Murray won that in 1790, if I remember. And so they were out, they were disestablished. They were kind of doing their own. They never had to break apart from the Standing Order. They always were outside of that established church realm. But either way, they both arose in about the same time period. My last little bit of from the history that I just would lift up is from the influence of the Enlightenment and the development of these strands of Unitarianism and Universalism into actual movements, actual organized movements. Up until that point, they were sort of heretical ideas within Christianity, but they started to become their own thing in about the early 19th century. And so you get then... These things kind of take on their... This is where you might say we started to break away from the mainstream of Christianity because we're organizing. We're saying, okay, we're Unitarian Christians. Okay, Unitarian Christians think these things. They don't think those other things. Okay, they organize themselves in these ways. Okay, now actually we're open to these other things. Okay, you know, in seminary I used to see this happen with like some of the liberal Methodists where they would go, oh, well, we should think of Christianity not as a series of beliefs. It should just be about practices. And I go, oh, once you start, look out, right? I don't know if I need to say anything else. I think those are kind of the main points I wanted to highlight. We'll come back to that in a bit. Okay. So finally, and most importantly in my own development, I started to read the text of some of our most central Unitarian and Universalist sermons. Hosea Ballou, William Ellery Channing, Clarence Skinner, and James Luther Adams. And I found these liberal Christian texts to be so powerful, enriching, and meaningful. I had one Unitarian Universalist colleague who left Unitarian Universalism in seminary because he said, there's no there. There's no content. And I think sometimes because we have left out, we sort of forget, we have shared amnesia or whatever about our Unitarian and Universalist Christian roots, we miss some of the juiciness of some of these claims and find ways. I a couple weeks ago I read Olympia Brown's Stand By This Faith, and that keep on finding new ways to apply these truths in your life. And I think there is something that we lose by not going back to some of these really meaty theological claims that were offered in some of these things that up until about 1950 were the center of our Unitarian Universalist faith tradition. So I guess all of this comes to say, my end conclusion for all of you to my answer to the question, are we Christian, remains yes and, as Marlon offers in his reflection. In that I kind of started to imagine this Venn diagram of Christianity, and that there is an overlap. And to imagine, I know some people answer it as not really. And I get why we answer that. For a long time, I went to a therapist that wore a cross, and finally I had to tell her, you know what that says to me? Like, it was early, and I really felt like it was a way of communicating. Like, it was hard for me to hear her and to experience her as welcoming. And so I know why we would step back from any kind of Christian identity. And I think that there's also some room to be able to say that there is an overlap in our identity with Christianity, and that we actually lose more by not being willing to have that yes and. We are Christian and we are humanist and we are, this is where I'm going to have Marlon pick up, but because he says it better than I do. But finally, I just imagine that we are a faith where everything can be on the table, that nothing should be off limits for our self-culture, our continuing growth, our sense of shared willingness to build the beloved community, to grow in ourselves, to grow in our sense of relationship with others. And so I'm interested in continuing to lift up all the pieces of our sources. Okay, with that said, I'm going to go back. I'm going to turn to Marlon.
Unitarians realize that the questions of life can be aided by the wisdom of other religions, by the ongoing discoveries of science, and by the prophetic words and deeds of men and women of all eras and all cultures and all generations. And so people in churches like All Souls in Tulsa march on, hoping to leave no stones unturned and no questions forbidden in the search for truth and love and light and spirit.
Amen.
But we must not forget that Unitarianism is rooted in the Judeo and Christian heritage. Even though Christianity has always meant something different to us than it has to others. If Christianity is about needing to have our original sin washed away by the blood of Christ, Unitarianism is not Christian. If Christianity is a belief in hell and eternal damnation, Unitarianism is not Christian. If Christianity requires a belief in the virgin birth, Unitarianism is not Christian. If Christianity demands a belief in the physical resurrection of Jesus and the infallibility of the Bible, then Unitarianism is not Christian. However, Jesus never said anything about original sin. He never mentioned eternal damnation. He didn't go around making a case that he was born to a virgin. And he didn't even leave any original writings behind. Rather, he left us with stories that were written down mostly by men who had never met him. How much of those stories are true? We don't know. But what we do know is that they speak of a religion so radical and free and a love so profound that it teaches that real people matter most, not religious laws and injunctions. Jesus befriended lepers and Samaritans and prostitutes and tax collectors and thieves. He expressed a love and an openness so profound that it calls for the death of all prejudice. The stories tell of a life touched by a reality so powerful that it transcended its own culture and the limits of humanity. He was so alive and open and confident that he stirred others to live so boldly and lovingly. The fullness with which he embraced life and the people around him gave these people an experience of God, an experience of the Spirit. Now, Jesus, the historic person, has been gone for 2,000 years. But Christ consciousness continues to influence and impact people to this day. This consciousness moves people not to simply follow the culture of our own times and the religious ideas of the past, but to seek what is true and what is real through our own direct experience in our own times. If being a Christian means being that alive and filled with such love for others, then I want to be a Christian. If it means being able to boldly define oneself rather than being defined by one's culture, then I would be a Christian. If it means living a life that aids others in living freely and fully as themselves, then count me in. Any attitude or religion that diminishes the fullness and worth of any other person is an insult to the meaning of Jesus' life. Jesus revealed God by loving so completely and living so fully. Now, it's not easy. Living this way demands that we expand our hearts. It requires that we bless our lives despite all that curses us. It requires the improbable practice of forgiveness in the face of cruelty. It requires that we love our neighbors as ourselves. If someone asks me if I'm a Christian, I might first ask them, what do they mean by Christian? Eventually, I would probably just say, I'm a Unitarian Universalist. Because for me, that expresses what I know to be best about Christianity. And at the same time, it allows me to be open so much more. Jesus said, I came that they might have life and have it more abundantly. To that I say, amen.